Hidden Joy and Artie Schiller's running his heart out on the inside. And Pato's got another Virginia Derby. It's Kitten's Joy, and Kitten's Joy is full of run to win by 2.5.
We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's off to the races. Here's Nick Hahn.
I promised you some British rock and roll this week in honor of Royal Ascot, hoping to deliver with the Stones and the mighty Led Zeppelin, taking us into this edition of Off to the Races. In about a half hour, we'll speak with Hall of Fame jockey Edgar Prado, who announced his retirement earlier this week. Edgar Prado is actually out in Las Vegas doing an event for the Disabled Jockeys Fund. And so we'll talk to him at about 10:30 or so Eastern time. He's getting up early. I'm sure he's used to it. 7:30 out there in Las Vegas. So looking forward to hearing that. You heard his call of winning the 2004 Virginia Derby with Kitten's Joy. Edgar Prado, strangely enough, my favorite stat about him, 2002, 2003, 2004, he wins the Virginia Derby. He was never the favorite in any of those races. So we'll talk to him in a little bit. David Ross will kick off our Countdown the Colonial segment as we talk to the leaders in the standings of Colonial Downs last summer. David Ross, of course, leading owner, pretty much perennial leading owner here in recent years. And he knows a little bit about Royal Ascot himself with Extravagant Kid, who ran third across the pond, as they say. We'll talk to him in about 15 minutes. Daryl Wood is just around the corner. And, of course, Derby Bill Watson, he'll be handicapping. It'll be interesting here to see where Derby Bill's mind is, because if you're watching on NBC, have it maybe potted down so you can listen to us on Off to the Races, you'll see they're not regular programming at all. They're covering the races today at Royal Ascot, the feature being the Queen Elizabeth, which will run right at 10:40. So maybe Derby Bill will have a winner. He'll certainly have the winner and maybe his winner at about 10:45 or so. Thanks for spending part of your Saturday morning with us. Let's get right to the replay segment of the show, and that involves one of the $450,000 stakes races that was at Monmouth Park last week. And a field of six went into the last leg of the Monmouth Pick Four. They had four stakes races, and this had the heavy favorite Tribuven, who raced in the Breeders' Cup. Only a field of six. Never Explain just came off of winning on Preakness weekend at Pimlico. Actually ended up doing the story on Never Explained, who was trained by Shug McGahey, owned by Cortland Farms, Luis Saez aboard. But there was a little wrinkle to this race with a Virginia Derby starter from last year and a horse that broke his maiden at Colonial Downs. Let's hear them. I think this is Larry Colmis calling the Monmouth Stakes last week at Monmouth Park.
Tribuven is still in front, 1:11-4 for 3/4 of a mile. Never Explain was tugging at Luis Saez, and Never Explain is ready to challenge at the top of the lane. Tribuven's got to dig deep down towards the inside. Never Explain has put a nose in front. Speaking Scout is going with this rival as well. It's Never Explain who's got the lead. Here comes Speaking Scout up on the outside. Also launching is Catnip. It's Never Explain in between horses, Speaking Scout. Catnip trying to catch up most. Catnip got up. Catnip gets up in time.
Yeah, first error of the show, that was not Larry Colmis, but Joel Rosario delivered Catnip, who comes back to win, won a race at Monmouth earlier, or actually last month, and a Kitten's Joy horse. Of course, we just mentioned you got Edgar Prado and Kitten's Joy, ends up winning the Monmouth Stakes. Congratulations to those connections. Susan and John Moore, leading stock, leading trainer Michael Stidham is the winning trainer there, and just a nice ride by Catnip, who broke his maiden at Colonial Downs with Javier Toledo aboard, and ended up running sixth in the Virginia Derby. He appears to be back, and I think I heard Stidham say he might even, he's thinking about the million with this horse. So we'll see how that progresses. Just also a quick note, Kings Barnes, who was a Derby starter making his first start since the Kentucky Derby, actually finished second in the Pegasus at Monmouth Park last week. That led off the stakes action. Salute the Stars gets the win. Brad Cox, Gary and Mary West there. Joel Rosario having a big day at Monmouth last week. Want to bring in now with some apt and familiar bumper music is our good friend Daryl Wood. And he is definitely the boxer when it comes to coverage of Colonial Downs this week. Good morning. Have the dogs gotten their had their water yet from their long walk this morning?
All good, Nick, and yeah, glad to be here on a Saturday morning, especially with finishing up a week when the Colonial Downs barn area opened and training began. That means racing is very close out in New Kent. July 13th is opening day, so good time of year right now.
Take us through the week. When did the stables open, and when did the track open for training? Who have you seen on the grounds? I've seen through your Virginia horse racing feed on Facebook, Karen Dennehy Godsey, who is obviously a hometown anchor trainer for the meet with Eagle Point Farm up there at Ashland. She's been active on some of the video. I saw Woodbury Payne there on the grounds. It's starting to come alive, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe the big question also is how much rain did New Kent get? But it was about 4 inches there over the three-day storm period, and it kind of muted a little bit the arrival of horses and stables and the number of horses that took advantage of the track being open yesterday for the first time. But when I was walking the barn area yesterday for training, there was probably maybe 60, maybe 70 horses on the grounds. You mentioned Karen Godsey and Woodbury Payne. David Bork, who's a Virginia trainer based up north, was there. A couple folks from Florida, from Gulfstream, had shipped in. Kelsey Danner actually was the first trainer on the grounds on Tuesday, but the track opened earlier than normal, as did the stable area, almost 3 to 3.5 weeks out. Normally, it's about a two-week flip, so it's going to be more gradual, but it gives people that want to come early a chance to familiarize their stables with the track and get acclimated, so that's a nice deal, but things are rolling.
Outside of the rain, which has just been, it was dry for a month, and then we get a week's worth of rain, you know, or months worth of rain in a week's period. But the mornings out there, just maybe for those who aren't familiar with it, an opportunity to go out. It is really one of the more tranquil settings in Virginia sports to go out there in the mornings and see those horses, you know, jogging, working from the gate. I mean, it really gives you a view of horse racing that many people don't see if you're just watching it on TV.
Yeah, and interestingly, where the public can watch morning workouts is on the patio of the Backstretch Kitchen, which is still in a non-licensed area. But the neat thing is that the starting gate is positioned just to the left of that patio. So when you see horses going to get their gate card and looking to, you know, train out of the gate for the first time, and then actually experience one's train to hear the bell of the starting gate and the chutes break open and the horses thunder away right in front of you on the dirt. I mean, that's right there for the public. So that's kind of a neat deal. Weather, again, not totally conducive yesterday, but again, racing's going to take place through September the 9th, so a long time left to go for public to enjoy, you know, the morning workouts. But yeah, tranquil. 6 till 10 in the morning, Monday through Saturday. No training on Sunday this year. But it is a really peaceful place to enjoy a cup of coffee.
Yeah, and you can either get it there at the track kitchen or bring it with you. So it really is like a great setting there, a good chance to learn a side of racing that has not been well covered in the press. It's a side of racing you just don't see very well. We saw that surfboard. We have very many Virginia certified winners through the residency program, which has been extremely successful with all the farms throughout the state. But this was actually a Virginia bred winner that won at Delaware earlier this week. A 2 year old, everyone getting their first starts now as the 2 year olds finally start hitting the gate. This one was bred by Morgan's Ford Farm. So, I saw that post from you earlier this morning.
Yeah, the talking to Woodbury Payne and Karen Godsey and a lot of the Virginia trainers that are going to be based there, David Bork, the Virginia Certified Program. And again, for folks that don't know, that's where out-of-state horses come into the state, reside for a minimum of 6 months before they start their racing careers, and then get rewarded as they begin accumulating purse money. But the Certified Program, really, there's going to be a lot of those horses running this summer at Colonial and earning reward money as well, and it's been a great boost to the Virginia horse industry, with farms being able to reinvest in the properties. It's a vibrant agribusiness right now, and the residency program is maybe the biggest reason why we're all here today talking about horse racing.
It really was really a successful venture that just continues to have a major agribusiness impact. Daryl, thanks a lot. We'll let you get the dog some water, and if there's any left over, you can have some too.
Yeah, Nick, look forward next month to hearing you guys, I guess, and myself too, for a short period, and Harrisonburg. Glad to welcome that part of the Shenandoah Valley to the Off to the Races network. So looking forward to a few months out there as well.
You must have sent that email this morning. That's great to hear. Daryl Wood, of course, we'll add to that a little bit later in the show, but that's great. You had the chance to break that. We're really looking forward to that. I teased that a little last week. Daryl Wood joining us on Off to the Races, and expanding Off to the Races to the Shenandoah Valley, not far down the road from Shenandoah Downs, with Harrisonburg becoming a market for Off to the Races beginning shortly before the first weekend of the meet. Congratulations. They'll be able to hear us on Off to the Races at JMU. Want to talk a little bit about Royal Ascot, which is a meet that started on Tuesday. It's just a 5-day high-end meet that's held at Ascot. When this meet's on, it's Royal Ascot, and in the past has been a favorite of course, Queen Elizabeth, and it was actually started by Queen Anne back in 1711, and on Wednesday, today is the closing day. We mentioned the TV coverage and the Queen Elizabeth feature, who we'll have a lot more on later in the show. But on Wednesday in the Queen Mary, we had some American interest in the race with George Weaver and John Velasquez. And this was just a thrilling race. I would encourage you to go back and watch the video of the race after you hear this call of the Queen Mary. You'll hear like the announcers covering the race really sort of discouraged in the result of the race, and talk about the American victory. Let's hear the stretch run of the Queen Mary.
But near side it continues to be. Crimson Advocate with a clear advantage, but here is Relief Rally, and Tom Marquand coming towards the line is very tight. Crimson Advocate and Relief Rally.
Oh, what a finish. Oh, has Relief Rally bobbed it on the line? I don't know. It's so close. So close. Crimson Advocate and, oh my goodness me, Relief Rally, who was causing all those problems before the start, in a photo in the Queen Mary. Who's won it, Kev? Do you know? You're going to call it? You're brave enough?
God, I think it's the American filly, isn't it?
Oh,
it's desperate. I think Relief Rally was in front for a moment. How was your bob?
Maybe slightly before and slightly after the line.
That's
but
tough.
For those of us with Relief Rally, we may... I think we may have to settle for second there. But let's talk about both these fillies. Jamie mentioned Crimson Advocate beforehand, who was a Gulfstream winner last time out. Johnny Velasquez has a fantastic record at Ascot.
Oh, fair play to them. Look, because, you know, I was going to make the point beforehand. You know, we've changed with these Americans. You know, you remember for a time, you know, Wes Ward, when he came here, like, they were so feared. They were some of the high horses of the entire week. They've gone a little bit low profile. We had a couple of soft ground Ascots where they weren't showing the best effect. But it's George Weaver this time showing us that the Americans are still a factor, especially in these 5 furlong races for juveniles.
What do you think, Jamie?
It's a new name to us, George Weaver, but he's had one Royal Ascot runner in the past. And even though it's a new name, it's a classic brazen speed American performance. Relief Rally had to chart and check a passage through. It's gone on for a long time, this photograph.
It's not maybe as... I'm going to make no bones about it. Relief Rally's my selection here. I think I may have been beaten, be gutted if that's the case, but wonderful for America. And if they have won with Crimson Advocate, that'll be a fifth victory. Here it comes. Number 9, call the winner, Crimson Advocate.
Yeah, just some suspenseful, thrilling moments on Wednesday morning in America. Congratulations to George Weaver and John Velasquez. I think the only one of the 9 American starters so far to have won at Royal Ascot, George Weaver, won the Black Eyed Susan. I had a chance to talk to him after he won the Black Eyed Susan with Point of Honor back in 2019, I believe. Which was one of his most prolific horses up until now, this Crimson Advocate. It's kind of interesting to watch this racing where this was a 5 furlong sprint. There's no turns, just straight down. You find a rail and there you go. And of course they race the opposite way at a Royal Ascot in England. Congratulations to those connections. Someone that knows a little bit about racing over at Royal Ascot is David Ross, who now joins us on Off to the Races. David has been the perennial leading owner at Colonial Downs over the last several years. And, of course, he campaigned Extravagant Kid all over the world. And he joins us now on Off to the Races. David, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for spending some time with us. I know you must have been keeping a little bit of an eye on Royal Ascot. You had Extravagant Kid, who came off of that win in Dubai with Alcors, in the Alcors, I should say, and ran we were actually going to run the stretch call during this segment, but Extravagant Kid only got mentioned once, and that was only at the very end of the race. What do you remember about racing at Royal Ascot?
It's just an incredible venue. First and foremost, the history of Royal Ascot and all of the races that make it up over the roughly week-long time frame is just very special. And we were over there in 2021. Extravagant Kid had finished an incredible race at the end of March in Dubai, becoming the first American horse to win the Elko's Sprint. That was 6 furlongs. Of course, it took an Irish trainer, Brendan Walsh, and an Irish rider, who is Ryan Moore. And Ryan went on that year to become the... he was voted the best rider in the world. But after that trip to Elko's in Dubai, the horse came back 14.5 hours in journey, and you think about a horse traveling that kind of distance, this horse was special. I mean, he could handle it. He enjoyed it. And coming back, he settled in very nicely for Brendan, and Brendan put the call into me and said, "David, you ready to go to Royal Ascot?" And we had accomplished the goals we had set out for Extravagant Kid early on that year. In fact, I think it was in February, he crossed the $1 million mark in earnings, and we had gotten close to that
with both Scuba in honorable duty. But those two didn't quite get there. They both ran into the 900,000 plus. So we said, you know what? Before we start looking at trips, let's get this horse to where we'd like him to get that goal. And basically, he accomplished it at Fairgrounds, finished second in a dirt race that was scratched off the turf, but he got over the $1 million mark. So Brendan, when the horse arrived back from Dubai, he said, you know, look, this horse is doing well. I don't see any reason why we don't give it a shot. We've been invited. And so Extravagant Kid made his journey over to Royal Ascot, where he entered the race, the King's Stand, which was run this past Tuesday. And the King's Stand is just one of the most historic races. I think it goes all the way back into the mid-1800s when it was first run. And Extravagant Kid was not able to secure a rider, secure a same rider at Royal Ascot because of the contract agreement that Ryan had with Coolmore, which is perfectly understandable. So they had a horse in the race. And so Brendan was able to secure Frankie Dettori. And Frankie rode the horse and came on late, finished in between horses, and was able to secure third. And that race is very much like the Dubai races and most international races, where those short sprints are run in a straightaway. So there's probably a reason why you don't see many American jockeys secure wins, and even American trainers for that matter, because they're mostly used to running on the ovals. But here you go, in this most recent race, the two-year-old race that Johnny V and George Weaver won, it was just great to see Johnny V do it with the two-year-old in a straight five furlong race. So very exciting. Royal Ascot was very special. Of course, the Queen had run many, many years there, and we were able to see the Queen. we came equipped with our tuxes and attire, and that was something else as well.
I was going to ask you about the top hat, how hard it was to pass the dress code and get through all the different enclosures, which, you know, that Ascot is known for. Moving toward the Colonial meet, while your horses, you brought up Honorable Duty, who won in New Orleans, and Scuba, who won at Kentucky Downs, and you wander all over the place. Bye Bye Bernie won at Woodbine, and the Nearctic race up there, and of course Extravagant Kid in Dubai. But your home is Colonial. I see where Rambert had a win at Delaware Park a couple of weeks ago. I'm sure that is probably a prep or a preview of maybe this horse coming to Colonial this summer.
Yes, Rambert is trained by Mike Stidham, and she has just been incredible, really developing into a pretty unbelievable horse. So we're excited. We think that we're going to nominate her anyway for the upcoming Open Stake at Colonial, the 5.5 for 3 and up fillies, the Open Stake. And she'll certainly have her shot at the end of the meet in the Virginia Restricted Stake. So Rambert is a declaration of war filly. Just has really come into her own and is just getting, I think, better as we go forward. So she's been impressive.
Who are some of the other horses that, being the leading owner, Colonial is obviously important to you. You've won that title so many years here, especially recently. What are some of the other horses you have that people can look for in the program headed to towards July 13th?
Yeah, we have We have a few, but I think we're excited about some of our two-year-olds, and I think we have a Virginia restricted horse by the name of Street Corner. She is a two-year-old filly who's out of Uno Strike, and Uno Strike is half to Rich Strike. And Rich Strike, of course, won the big race, the I think it was the Derby.
Yeah, the Kentucky Derby.
Years too back.
Sure.
Yeah.
Big long shot.
So, anyway, the Uno Strike also had a horse by the name of Tackett. Tackett was a great horse, got injured, and basically retired early, just not risking running the horse any further. But we have a few really good two-year-olds. So Street Corner, we're looking forward to running. She is by Uno, out of Uno Strike by Street Boss. And so we're excited about that. We're excited about, we have a few other horses that are going to be able to continue on and run at Colonial. A horse by the name of Scano, Palio, a few others that, you know, we're just getting ready. And Mike has most of them. And we'll be... we'll be positioned and ready to go. And we'll be racing down there under new ownership. So that's exciting, too.
Yeah, with obviously with Churchill Downs, new owners in their maiden year in Virginia. Well, David, we appreciate you spending some time with us, remembering your adventure in at Royal Ascot with Extravagant Kid, and we'll be looking for those two-year-olds in the Knicks Picks tip sheets this summer at Colonial Downs. Thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
Good. Well, thank you.
David Ross joining us on Off to the Races. We're going to go to break on Off to the Races. When we come back, we'll speak with Edgar Prado, who will be joining us from Las Vegas. You'll hear some bumper music here from The Who as we go into break. Some of the favorite bumper music of a loyal listener to the show, Mark Janitis, playing this in honor of his father, who passed away this week, and certainly our condolences to the Janitis family and Mark, who has attended the 2002 Kentucky Derby with us back in the day. You're listening to Off to the Races. Stay put. We're powered by theracingbiz.com.
Live racing at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races rolls on every Wednesday through Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern through March 1st and every Thursday through Saturday through the month of October. Mark your calendars for Friday, August 25th for the 15th renewals of the Grade 2 $1 million Charlestown Classic and Grade 3 $750,000 Charlestown Oaks, now the richest three-year-old filly sprint stakes race in North America. So come see us here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Learn more at Hollywood Casino Charlestown.
Virginia's horse racing and horse breeding industry is built on the talents, skills, labors, and passions of incredible people working in all parts of the Commonwealth. Horses fuel the economy, power tourism, reinforce agriculture, and create jobs. From farmers to blacksmiths, trainers to vets, and racehorse staff to surrounding small businesses, the local horse racing and breeding industry alone supports 5,300 jobs and has an overall economic impact of $542 million annually. Over 5,400 horses are owned by Virginians, and another 2,400 out-of-state horses are boarded at Virginia farms. Last year, over $4 billion was wagered on horse racing in Virginia. Learn more about this thriving agribusiness at virginiahorseracing.com. And be sure to enjoy the Colonial Downs Summer Thoroughbred Racing Season in New Kent, which runs from July 13th through September 9th, every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday afternoon at 1:30. And we're back. back live on Off to the Races, Living the Dream. Actually going to step in and do this interview of on behalf of Frank Vespi, who has as much of an interest in our next guest on the show as I do, as Edgar Prado now joins us on Off to the Races, announcing his retirement earlier this week. Edgar Prado was, when I was getting involved in racing, he was an anchor in Maryland racing. I still think he holds like the record for the most wins in Maryland racing history. He just won and won races. And for years, you were just wondering when he was going to break through and start racing nationally and racing in the Triple Crown. And boy, did he have an impact in the Triple Crown. Edgar, thanks for spending some time with us on Off to the Races this morning, joining us from Las Vegas. Tell us what you're doing out in Las Vegas this morning.
First of all, thank you so much for the opportunity to be on the show. I'm in Vegas at the moment, helping the Jockeys in Gym charity event that helps the PDGF, the Permanently Disabled Jockey Fund.
Yeah. That is such a beneficial operation and so important to many of the jockeys. We recently had Ron Turcotte on the show, and of course he has done a number of events as well for obvious reasons, becoming paralyzed in a race. And it's something that's near and dear to not only, especially of course for those who ride, but for everybody that follows the sport. Edgar, we mentioned and played at the beginning of the show the 2004 Virginia Derby. Before we start talking a little bit about the Triple Crown, I want to ask you about racing at Colonial Downs and racing in Virginia. In 2002 with Orchard Park, with 2003 Silvertree, 2004 with Kitten's Joy, you won the Virginia Derby three times in a row. You were never the favorite in either of those races, inexplicably. You were such a good rider, right? Winning during Colonial's opening meet, I think it was some 57 wins or so. What do you remember about racing at Colonial Downs and racing in the Virginia Derby?
Well, at the beginning, it was a good experience because it was a new track, beautiful turf course, and we don't know what to expect then, but as soon as the races start running and they started attracting more horses, I broke the record for most win in a short period of time. But then I think Caramanos broke it, but they added more days and I think it's holding the record right now. The turf course is so beautiful. I think it's one of the best that I ever rode. You know, the horses that I rode, they were very good at the time. Wild Orchid, I think that's the name. Silver Tree, which?
Orchard Park?
Orchard Park, yeah, Orchard Park. Kidding Joy. Kidding Joy was one of the best horses, you know, in the turf.
Yeah. Yeah, Kitten's Joy, Orchard Park, and Silver Tree, those winners at Colonial. So, yeah, it's certainly one of the best turf courses. Then you finally got a chance to move up. It was sort of a door that was opened when, of all people, a guy you see on TV all the time, Richard Miglior, when he went down with an injury, trainer Jimmy Kimmel gave you an opportunity to go up to New York. What do you remember and what do you recall about taking that step up from Maryland to New York?
It was a hard decision to make, you know, because I was doing so well in Maryland. I was average about 300, 400 races a year. My family was established there. The reception was great in Maryland. I had a lot of friends, great friends. But I think it was this opportunity to go by. I was getting older, and if I want to reach the next level of my career and try to ride the big races in 2004, so I took that opportunity to ride for John Kimmel, you know, when Richard McGarry got hurt.
Yeah, it was an opportunity to move up, and you made the most of that opportunity. You won the 2002 Belmont Stakes with Sarava in a big upset, but your biggest impact in the Belmont Stakes was in this race in 2004 when Smarty Jones was going for the Triple Crown. Here is Tom Durkin's call of the 2004 Belmont Stakes.
And Smarty Jones enters the stretch to the roar of 120,000. But Birdstone is going to make him earn it today. The whip is out on Smarty Jones. It's been 26 years. It's just one furlong away. Birdstone is an absurd threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
I was watching some of the video from the race last night and preparing for the show, and when they did the interview with you after the race, as much as of a villain, as a bad guy as you were with thwarting the Triple Crown, you handled that moment so great, and you described it. What were your thoughts? I mean, it must have been sort of a weird feeling because Smarty Jones was an exceptional horse, but you were the one that beat him in the Belmont Stakes. What do you remember from that?
Well, you know, I rode this Burston in the Kentucky Derby. He won well, considering that he was bumping around most of the race. And then Nick Hiro skipped the Preakness. So I didn't ride the Preakness. And then he was going to, Smarty Jones was going for the Triple Crown. And I know John Servis, I know Stuart Elio, you know, they're good friends of mine. I rode with him, and I was rooting for Smarty Jones to become a Triple Crown, because we need a hero in sport. We've been looking for that for many years. And I was rooting so hard, but when the gate opened, you know, you have to do your job. And I was riding, and around the turn, I was getting closer and closer, saying, oh, my God, I hope it's not me. And I was riding and pushing and whipping and trying to do my best to win, because that's your job, you know? And I was getting closer, and said, oh, my God. So it was like, how you said, bittersweeter, no?
Yeah,
and when I passed the wire, I said to Stuart, I'm sorry. And he said, okay, it's okay, don't worry. And then I said to the people, no, that was watching, and said, I'm sorry, because, you know, I have to win this race and ruin the Triple Crown, but it's my job, and I'm getting paid for it.
Yeah, that's exactly what you said, that it was your job. And certainly you had to wear the black hat that day, but eventually you got around to wearing the white hat. And that would come with Barbaro with Michael Matz's horse there in 2006. Here is Barbaro winning the Kentucky Derby in 2006.
And here comes Barbaro. The undefeated Barbaro comes up on the outside, and he takes the lead as the field turns for home in the Kentucky Derby. Barbaro turns it on, and his stablemate showing up is second. Bluegrass Cat is third. Brother Derek putting in a late run on the far outside. Steppenwolf is fifth, and Sweet Northern Saint sixth toward the rail, but they're coming to the finish, and it is all Barbaro in a sublime performance. He runs away from them all, and he has saved something left for the Preakness. Barbaro wins by seven.
Yeah, winning by seven lengths. I didn't realize till last night how long it had been since a horse had won by seven lengths or more in the Kentucky Derby. Barbaro was a special horse. He was Andy Beyer thought he would win the Triple Crown. What are your thoughts about Barbaro?
Well, he was excellent horse in the dirt. He won the Kentucky Derby. But I think he was far superior in the turf. I couldn't find another horse that was better than him in the turf. And I rode so many good ones, you know. Thanks God, in my career, I was able to ride Kid and Joy, Magistrati, Dinon, and so on and forth. The list go on. But Barbaro was absolutely superior on the turf. I not think, you know, he could have won the Triple Crown. He got the right tools, and I don't think the distance, the mile and a half, could affect it. It's a big horse by Dinah Foreman. He could have had the distance fine. But unfortunately, he got injury in the Preakness.
Yeah, he got injured in the Preakness during the running of the race, and of course, the saga that ensued afterwards with the with trying to cure him of laminitis, and a book that you actually were authored, My Guy Barbaro, was a book that came out of that. So, sad story there, but just a great moment for you with Barbaro. As you head toward retirement, and you have so many fans. Rick Madison used to just bet your horses blindly, I should say. A guy that in my circle was, always there at the track. A big fan of yours. You've had a relatively injury-free career. You haven't seen a lot of missed time. Nearly 40,000 starts, over 7,000 wins, over a quarter billion in earnings for your career. What do you look forward to in retirement? Edgar? Okay, we may have lost Edgar there. Good thing we did get through a lot of the interview. Hey, he's retired, but he really is just a classy guy. His English is much improved than when he first came here. Rode so many good horses like Filmmaker and Take Charge Lady and, of course, Birdstone Barbaro. And his family, I was going to bring up too, also a number of jockeys and trainers, Annabelle Prado, riding in the Mid-Atlantic as well. So thank you, Edgar, if you're tuned in, if you can hear me. Thank you for doing the interview. We appreciate the time, and we certainly want you to enjoy retirement. Just bringing in Frank Vespi here just to get a couple of comments, because Edgar was such a big rider in Maryland. And Frank, heard the interview there. You know, what were your thoughts about Edgar Prado's retirement and just his career?
Hey, Nick, good to join you. And I like you, when I first started coming around to the races in Maryland, Edgar Prado was the man. And, you know, every horse that Edgar was on was live. And you always had to sort of account for him as a betting matter. And, just a tremendous career. And, you know, one of the things that didn't come up is he retires as also the leading rider of Maryland Million Winners, which, you know, maybe isn't a big deal in the whole wide world, but is a pretty big deal in Maryland, and won his last one, I think, in 2018. I mean, one of the neat parts of the story with Edgar is he sort of cuts his teeth in Maryland, goes to New York, you know, becomes a big, big star, wins Triple Crown races, wins over 300 graded stakes, if you can imagine. And then late in his career, you know, about 2016, comes back to Maryland a little bit, comes back home, rides a little more in Maryland, wins a couple more stakes, wins the Maryland Million Classic in 2018 with Saratoga Bob. And so just kind of puts the bow on his career, which I think is kind of just a neat way for the story to end.
It really is. And Edgar was, he's from Lima, Peru. He's my age. He was born in 1967. And he was just serious. He was sensitive. He was professional. He was consistent, consistently good. And he was mild mannered. It just had a great personality as a jockey. And maybe when you looked at that Barbaro situation, the perfect jockey for that situation. Frank, we're going to move on here on Off to the Races, but we. Appreciate you. I wanted to get the Maryland side of Edgar Prado, because he was just huge in Maryland, especially when I was starting to learn the game. Thanks a lot, Frank.
All right. Thank you, Nick.
Frank Vespi, joining us, and just wanted to, like I said, to have at least a little bit of that Maryland angle. We're coming up on the anchor leg, and maybe we can, I don't know exactly where they are. I'm not used to this NBC programming so early during the cartoon era. Do they still have cartoons on Saturday morning? But we can maybe at least get some bumper music here. Not sure if it's Royal Ascot or Cleveland this morning, but let's hear what Derby Bill has lined up for some bumper music this morning. It's hard for me. I think he did that because he knows I'm a Steeler fan. I was sort of expecting God Save the Queen, but we'll see here. And joining us now on Off to the Races, we're going to pick the Ohio Derby. Maybe the Lady Jacqueline, which is also on the undercard. But the Queen Elizabeth, I believe, is probably finished by now. See if Derby Bill has an update for us on the racing at Royal Ascot this morning. Derby Bill. He might be hunting that result right now. Oh, there he is. Derby Bill.
Sorry, just watching Jamie Spencer win a stunning 73-1 victory over
what?
There in Royal 70, Ascot.
73-1, Jamie Spencer. He's the great foiler of the pick six, isn't he?
He's had two wins, I think, over there, but this one was 73-1 in the Queen's race. The race named after the Queen, so I guess Jamie's the king now.
Condemned?
He dethrones. Charles, 73-1, he can be the king of anything.
That horse has not won since last year, since July.
Yeah, I think he was pulling the carriage around with Queen Elizabeth last year. Now he's they let him loose and he run today, 73-1. It's crazy, crazy.
30-1.
It's a dartboard. It's an Ascot dartboard for handicappers.
It's been fun. One of the things, you've seen this in some of my texts going back and forth, is I've gotten in this habit of playing these real narrow pick six tickets, but I try and play them on almost every card. Had four winners. Like, a pick six at Royal Ascot must pay in the hundreds of thousands of American dollars in most cases. I saw it was only like $200 yesterday, but with a 73-1, you know those payouts are big. Tell us, what is your strategy about betting Ascot? Do you just take a dartboard and throw it at it? And you can't even do that because you have so many horses. Go ahead.
Usually the trainers are the key there, and Aiden O'Brien, and usually pops out a few wins, and he's won. I think he's won enough where you'd make some Lipton tea money. Tea bags or something. I think he's won four already, so hopefully Aiden will bring him over to Colonial Downs August 12th. Several of these horses will be coming across the pond. That's extra interest for us this year because of the big day on August 12th. You'll see, might see Jamie Spencer here. You never know if he gets a mount or two, but Roger Moore and there's some of the best jockeys. Frankie DeTerra is the big story this year. He's won three already this week, and it's his final career farewell tour, unless he's like Leonard Skinner, who's going to, unretire 17 years in a row. So Frankie DeTerra, if he comes to Royal New Kent August 12th, will be big if he gets here and runs in the big day. So some interest from across the pond coming over here because you and I have been to the Arlington Million before, and it's quite an international flavor there when they race at Arlington on the turf for years and years. It's like the DC International years ago up at Laurel. It's just it's a mixture when you get these turf horses that come over, and absolute 30 horse fields. It's like, yeah, there's no handicapping possible on a 30 horse field when they run from three gates in Ascot, three separate gates when they start, and it's just a stampede. I do like they run straight and don't turn. It's kind of neat. I'd like to see a track in America try that, besides quarter horses. It'd be easier on the horses not to turn, for sure. I'm sure over there you just pace yourself and go for it.
And of course, they go the wrong way. You know, that's something just visually you have to sort of get used to is looking for these horses when they do go around the turns.
Well, when the Queen came over to the Kentucky Derby, she said we were going the wrong way. So it's very confusing, just like driving over there. You ever drive over there and you get in a car and you go, what the hell?
Have you ever been to England?
No. They never. I think they banned me. They banned me for saying something bad about the Beatles.
Wanted to, we were just got the image of, and of course, James Flowers, who's our producer, put the image in my head right before the show of you in a top hat and an ascot tie at Royal Ascot. That would really be I'm trying to put that vision in all of our listeners' heads. That would be a sight to see.
I think you'd fit right in. Retire and go over there for Ascot and then stay for the British Open. I mean, that and stay in the same clothes probably.
with a jug of ale in your left hand. Yeah, that would be retirement, wouldn't it?
That would be a nice trip. There's we've done some trips in the past that have burned the midnight hour, so anything's possible in life. That's my.
You wouldn't even have to go through West Virginia.
No, I just don't want to take a submarine or the Titanic across the pond. I would fly.
Oh boy, yeah. Well, let's not put you out the farm just yet, and we'll talk. Let's move on to the Ohio Derby here. A Grade Three going a mile and an eighth. $500? Yeah, $500,000 stakes race has a field of eight, including Lord Miles, who returns. Vexo horse, Sappy Joseph, the trainer there, and sort of a controversial, I wonder still what they're going to do with that scratch of Lord Miles in the Derby. I don't think we've seen the last of that. But the also in the race is Hayes Strike, who has won two of his last three, including the private terms at Laurel Park for Kenny McPeak, who's a regular guest on this show. Two Phils. The horse that broke his maiden at Colonial Downs won't have Jareth Loveberry on. Gerardo Corrales gets the assignment as Loveberry got hurt earlier this week, injured his left arm coming out of the gate at Canterbury, finished the ride, rode his horse there fifth to a fifth place finish on Wednesday night. Second in the Derby in that heroic front-running run, nearly winning the race, Mage catching him in the final strides there. Is that how impactful is the jockey switch there on Two Phils going to be in the Ohio Derby?
Well, familiarity is definitely the key there. Jared's rode him since he was here at Colonial Downs, but they won, you know, with the Two Phils victory here. And it's definitely he knows how what the horse's, you know, attributes are. You saw it in the Kentucky Derby when he rode probably the best race of his career and had the lead in the Kentucky Derby and might have pushed the gas pedal a little fast, but still finished second solidly. Lord Miles, the interesting one there is Sappy. Joseph Sappy got banned from the Derby for, you know, the violation syndrome triple crown, I'm calling it this year. So, but the Wood Memorial win was just monster for Lord Miles. And I'm sure Cade Middleton and King James are all betting on Lord Miles today in the Ohio Derby after they have some afternoon tea after Ascot. But Two Phils definitely the best horse here. I mean, he's the best. Just got to let him run, you know, and not let him get out too fast. And he should win this one with no problem. And he could get in your picture for the top three-year-old male of the year if he wins today. That gets him back in the picture until he gets to Saratoga and runs against Mage and Archangela and Forte, obviously, and Arabian Knight, actually. So the three-year-old field's just wide open still. With Natural Treasure in there, and you got Disarmed. It's just wide open for the three-year-olds on the dirt. But, you know, this race, I think Two Phils just solid. Last, the Jeff Ruby win and the Kentucky Derby showed this horse it has class. And Larry Ravelli probably pretty ticked off at, you know, Jared for, you know, injury. But what can you do?
Yeah, no, Gerardo Corrales was the rider of Two Fields' first mount. One of the three-year-olds who I think is in contention for that wide-open three-year-old champion title is Arcangelo. Arcangelo only beat Bishop's Bay by a head in the Peter Pan. So that's a horse I'm sort of focusing in on, especially with the jockey change. I think I'm going to back Bishop's Bay here. You think Two Fills is good enough to get the job done despite the forced jockey switch?
Yeah, I mean, I like Henry Q a little bit. Have a shot in the race at the loves distance racing, so that would help him. But I think Two Fills has it unless something happens and he goes out too fast and the jockey lets him go too fast and just not used to the horse like Jarrett was. But I'm going to play Two Fills in the pick four. They have a nice pick four of stakes races there today, 9, 10, 11, and 12 at Thistle. So, as I said before, Cleveland rocks today. Just a big, big festival out there in Cleveland this week. But as you said, that horse you mentioned, Arcangelo, you had the trainer on there on the radio a couple weeks ago. Just his bad, his fires is just amazing. Went from 53 to 70 to 84 to 97 to 102 when in the last race. I mean, the horse has just steadily, turned it on as he got a little bit older. And you'll see that with three-year-olds, they get better with age. So the three-year-old field's not as bad as people think. The Triple Crown was, but the horses, the top eight are pretty solid horses to me.
Yeah, pretty deep. Got about 45 seconds here. What else do you like, whether it's Ascot or Cleveland?
Well, you've got the Ellis Park.
Okay.
Punchline just because it's Churchill Downs and Colonial Downs has got to watch and admire anything Churchill Downs does. So the Chicago Stakes got moved to Ellis Park today, which is kind of strange for people to follow because most people haven't followed Ellis Park. But there's a horse called Society in that race and Mata Ray. And the key is Hidden Connection, the horse that run at Colonial Downs and won. Just needs a race, and I'm going to back Hidden Connections at 3-1 in the Chicago Stakes. Very confusing. The Chicago Stakes moved from Churchill Downs to Ellis Park. So that's quite a trifecta there. But Hidden Connection, the winner of Colonial Downs at 3-1, I'm going with in the Chicago.
There you go. Derby Bill with his picks today on Off to the Races. Want to thank Edgar Prado, Frank Vespi, David Ross, Daryl Wood, and heartbroken James Flowers for doing a great job on the board there, coming back from Omaha where he watched his Horned Frogs. Thanks for everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week. Off to the Races, 10 o'clock.